Hi, Craig Wilkinson, and this is Dangerous But Good. Today, I, without any disrespect to my previous guest, today is the most special and beautiful and beloved guest I've had yet. My very own daughter, Blythe, all the way from New Zealand, and I'm just so excited about this conversation. Blythe.
Good to be here.
Is it good to be here?
A little bit nervous.
It took a while to convince you, hey?
Yeah.
But there's so much beautiful stuff to talk about, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And we're busy writing a book together.
We are.
Very exciting stuff, eh? We were just having a conversation earlier with the guys that are doing the filming around teenage years, and they said to you, you don't want to deal with teenagers because you know how you were as a teenager. And you said, no, I know how my classmates were as a teenager.
No, I was an angel.
And I said, well, that's what I thought, and let's keep it that way.
What doesn't kill you.
Yeah, exactly. What you don't know doesn't kill you.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I prefer knowing. I think. Yeah, Blythe. But you definitely, and Luke, your brother, changed my life. I mean, I must just say the joy and the privilege of raising you has been mind-blowing. And it remains that way. I mean, you're almost 30 now. Mm. But it's been the most incredible, beautiful journey right from the start. And it's what led me to write books about fatherhood and be so passionate about it, because so often we saw – many of your friends who didn't have dads, hey? And it was quite, I mean, you could see the impact, hey?
Yeah, they loved having you as a secondary pops.
Secondary pops.
Yeah.
It was, and still is amazing, beautiful. I mean, they say that there's a saying that says a father's a daughter's first romance. But from my perspective, it's a sacred love that you just can't describe, you know? I mean, I remember traveling overseas when you were a kid, when you were little, and being in America and speaking to you on the phone, because there was before WhatsApp and FaceTime. And literally I had a physical ache in my arms because I wanted to hug you and hold you, And it was just such a beautiful, beautiful time, you know? What are your memories of those early days?
I mean, I don't know, hey, like moving to Knysna, I guess. And that conversation of really just wanting you to be with us before you moved there, you know, and feeling wrong without the pops there.
I remember that conversation. Yeah. I remember I tell that story often. Because you guys moved to Knysna 2 weeks before I just still finished up stuff. And I remember being on the phone to you and saying, Blythe, isn't life beautiful by the sea? And I remember your response. It was weird. You said, if this was my life, I would scream. And I said, why? And you said, because you're not here, pops, you know, or dad.
Secretly for joy, though.
Huh? Screaming for joy.
Yay.
Yay, dad's not here. I can do whatever I want. Yeah. But you were only 7 then, eh?
Yeah.
Amazing. And then, I mean, it's been a beautiful journey. We'll talk a lot about that, but also some pretty tough times. I mean, for me, probably the hardest time was when Mom and I got divorced, and I sat you and Luke down. I mean, you must have been 9, hey?
No, I think I was 7.
7?
7 or 8, yeah.
7 or 8, and I remember, as clear as day, I remember sitting down in that room, you and Luke, and telling you that we were going to get divorced. And I was I was battling not to sob, you know, just because I mean, here we were just, in my view, we were just shattering your life, you know. And but you afterwards, we chatted about recently, had different kind of memory of that, eh?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know what the, I mean, I guess I do know why, but like, I think it was just dealt with in such a way that I didn't feel impacted and negatively, or I didn't feel hard done by, or that this was the end of the world. I guess you and Mom dealt with it and allowed me and Luke to feel whatever emotions we had about it. And it was just done in a way that didn't ruin our lives and didn't affect us in a bad way, you know? Also doing that, what was that course that Neil did?
At the church, the divorce recovery course.
Divorce recovery course. That was pretty cool as well, just to like talk about those little emotions with other kids that were going through the same thing too. And just, I don't know, maybe just in knowing that you guys made the right decision for everyone, you know? Yeah. You and mom weren't meant to be.
Compatible.
And that's like, it's good to do that instead of having to carry on in a marriage that was going to cause more damage, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you. Yeah, but for us, it felt like a real failure, you know? I mean, it's in many ways it is. It's not plan A by any means.
No.
Not plan A by any means. But I think you'd also picked up, because I mean, I remember you'd said something to me that, You, I won't say what, but you're this kind of dad, hey? And then you said, well, mom's not really that kind of mom. Hey? It was like,
no, exactly.
It just, you know, not right or wrong, but just.
Yeah, just different.
Very different. Yeah.
It was the best move, actually.
Yeah, well, it was such a relief for me to hear that, because, you know, you kind of look back and think it's a failure and it was damaging. And But I think it made us hone in on really being present and engaged and, you know, never blaming, and particularly emphasizing that it's absolutely not your fault or Luke's fault. It's our adult stuff, our adult shit that we had to deal with. Not yours at all.
I think that was done pretty streamlined, though.
I guess. I mean, it didn't feel like it to me at the time.
But you did well.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, we try to completely make it seamless and protect you and. Make sure you had two loving homes, no conflict. You know, so that was What are some of the? We talk about some of those beautiful things. What are some of the toughest times that you remember in terms of growing up?
I don't know. I guess the one part was hard was to not to split time. You know, like to be with mom and then be with you, and then wanting to be with both, but not being able to. And that was, I guess, harder to navigate.
Yeah,
I guess.
I remember one of the things we used to do, remember when I was away and you were staying at mom and I was often had to work in different cities.
Mm.
Remember we had that little ritual where at night where I would say to you, go outside, and you'd go outside and then I'd say, look at the moon. And then I'd look at the moon and I'd say, we're looking at the same moon. We connected through the moon. That was, do you remember those?
I do, too sad to answer the phone.
There were times when, there were times when I phoned you and you couldn't stop speaking. And there were times when you were sad and missing and you didn't answer the phone. And we understood that. We understood that. And in terms of just, I mean, the relationship between a father and a daughter is incredibly beautiful, but it can also be incredibly damaging. Hey, I mean, you see so many movies where there's a broken woman on drugs and, you know, and as the story develops, you realize that it's back to just a broken father relationship. Hey?
Yeah. Daddy issues, as they call them these days.
Daddy issues.
Daddy issues.
And I mean, you've got quite a few friends who've experienced that, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, we all know someone, eh?
We do.
Without support in that relationship. Yeah.
And so many, there's so much of that hurt leads to just a bit of a war between the genders, hey? Sort of an understandable resentment towards men because
they've broken.
But how do you, what do you say to a woman like that as a woman? Because it's real. The pain is real.
Yeah, the pain is real, yeah. It's
not easy to fix.
Not easy to fix, no. But, you know, having other role models in your life, like brothers and friends, and I know lots of my friends have, you know, really looked up to uncles or, you know, even just people in our friend group that have shown them, like, the safety of a man, you know, and that there is that goodness out there. And you can rely just not, even if it's not your father, on other men around you that can role model that behavior in a positive way. Yeah. And I think a lot of women do that. They still seek. They seek validation from men, you know, and can go wrong. But I know a lot of people that have found positive outcomes in that, you know.
And found healing from that.
Absolutely.
I think the key is to, you can never say they all are. Hey? Never say.
No.
All men are, or all women are. But yet that wound is so deep. And I think the father wound or the mother wound.
Yeah.
Because mothers and fathers are the most important people in your lives.
Yeah.
Can run very deep, both for boys and girls, men and women.
Yeah.
What are some of the highlights you remember of your childhood?
Put me on the spot. Many highlights, yeah.
I hope there are some. many.
Many, many, many highlights.
Good memories.
Yeah. Lots of adventures, lots of camping and road trips and yeah.
You didn't love all of them though.
No.
I remember I was an avid hiker and at one point, you know, I used to drag you guys along and the one particular hike you were very not happy, huh?
Yeah, not having it, no.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
And yet we forced you all the way to the top of Lion's Head and I thought at some point you're going to cheer up.
No, I can be quite stubborn in that way. I decided I wasn't going to enjoy it, so I didn't.
And you never actually cheered up. I've got photographs. It looks like there's a storm cloud above you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And if you had to think back on some of the toughest conversations we've had maybe or toughest interactions, because, I mean, it's never always just.
Yeah, it's never easy or it can be easy, but it's, yeah, it's been, I mean, you know, like as you say, your daughter is your first, that's your first romance, you know, and with as a daughter as well, like you were my first love, you know, and I think daughters look to their dads and they put them on this really high pedestal and they're saints in their eyes, you know, and they could never do anything wrong because that's your dad. Like they don't do that, you know. And obviously there comes a time when you become more aware of life and people's downfalls and things. And, you know, like the first time finding out your dad is also a human. It's like quite heartbreaking, you know, because you're like your whole world shatters. You're like, no, but he's a saint. He can't do anything wrong, you know. And so that was quite like a big one, you know. I can't remember the exact moment, but I mean, slowly over the over time, you start to realize that, and it's, you know, unsettling. You have to navigate through those emotions, you know, of humanizing.
Right. Taking
humanizing off the pedestal. Your dad,
yeah. Luckily, that never happened with me.
Yeah, funny.
And teenage years, I mean, I honestly, looking back at your teenage years, I mean, obviously there's some angst and there's hormonal changes and body changes. And I mean, but we were very blessed to, throughout that period, maintain a very good relationship, eh?
Yeah.
I mean, it was never like you're a rebellious teenager hating a father. I mean,
yeah.
There were one or two incidences where you were very upset with me, you know, rocking the daisies.
Yeah.
Share your perspective of that. Share your perspective of that one.
Well, you know, like becoming an older teenager, I guess, like 16 maybe, all my friends, even some older friends, I could go out and party and like, you know, obviously their parents let them do that or they just got away with it somehow. And I wanted to do it too. I wanted to go out and be independent and I'm old enough now, you know, and wanted to go to this festival and you wouldn't allow it.
Well, I mean, it was one particular festival. Eh? You were 17. And you were so excited because you managed to find tickets to Rocking the Daisies.
Yeah.
And I definitely wasn't so excited because I investigated this. It was like a bit of a Woodstocky situation, eh? With much older kids getting drunk, taking drugs, you know. And I thought, my 17-year-old. and I said, no, but you can go next year when you're 18.
Yeah,
and, but I was very unpopular with your friends too because I think some of their dads also decided.
Oh, is it? Yeah, I don't remember that part, but.
But I do remember driving you to school for a few days and it was like icy atmosphere.
You don't trust me.
I don't trust you. Yeah. But, I mean, I you knew, didn't you, always, that I adored you. I mean, anything I did or said was out of love, even if I didn't always get it right. Eh?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Any other tough conversations or, you know, that come to mind? I mean, that's a very good point, you know, when you realize that your parents are not perfect and they're human and they mess up too. Yeah.
And you also, like, I never wanted to disappoint you, you know. Mm. There was never pressure from you for me to be like this angel and not do anything wrong or anything. But, like, deep down, I wanted to impress you always and be the best that I could be and, like, make you proud, you know. Mm. So, like that pressure, even though it was internal and wasn't, you know, something that you made me be, you know, there's that as well. That also is was difficult to navigate. But I always knew that I could tell you things, even though some of them were quite hard to say.
I remember a few conversations where you'd come through, especially after 18, when you'd, you know, started going out and maybe had a drink or two, and you come back and knock on the door at 2 a.m. and a little bit tearful, and we had conversations about stuff, you know. But I was so grateful for that, you know. And I think that's so important, to create an environment where you can tell me anything as a father, and I'm not going to judge, I'm not going to hate, I'm not going to reject, because, you know, a relationship's based on being authentic and telling the truth, and I'm very grateful to that. Yeah. I mean, to this day, I've never stopped being incredibly proud of you, never. I mean, and after leaving school, there was a bit of a journey in terms of, you know, what do you want to do, and trying out something and almost qualifying. And
almost qualifying, yep.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
Doing a year of fitness training, and you were one of the most physical in your whole class. I mean, you're a natural athlete, but there was just one assignment that
did not get completed.
One assignment didn't get completed. And when we went to graduation, you were almost qualified.
But the weird thing is, they let me on stage and they gave me a piece of paper, and I was like, "Oh, I've made it."
Yeah.
And then we opened the paper and it said almost. It's like, why did you invite me to graduation?
But I mean, even that was just understanding that you were on a journey, you know.
Yeah.
But you were always, I used to call you the Pied Piper, because you used to go to a restaurant. And you would pick up all the babies, you know. Mm. Young kids would just follow you. Pick up babies, and, you know, you'd have this following, and that ended up resulting in you studying early childhood development, and getting that degree, Auckland University. Turning it into a very fruitful career. And I mean, even now, there's a journey, hey?
You know, we were talking
earlier about purpose and destiny and what it means and where you're going, and it's a journey, hey, of discovery.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm still young.
You're still young. Well, still almost 30, hey? No, there's plenty of time, isn't there?
Yeah.
Plenty of time. And I'm so grateful too for the man that you found to be in your life.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I had a great role model to show me how to be treated, you know, and what to expect in a man. And
but you just told me how you realized I wasn't that, eh?
Well, you're human too.
Yeah. Well, I think that's so important, right, for a dad. I mean, you set the bar as to what's okay for a woman. Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
To be respected, to be loved, to be nourished, to be treated as an equal, to be, you know. And I think your partner, David, does that, eh?
Yeah. Well, one of the first things that attracted me to him was he is already a father, and the way that he fathers is just was so beautiful to witness and see, because I have that with you, you know. And I was like, well, I can recognize that love and that deep, deep connection. So it was...
Well, they say you can judge a man by how he treats his mother and how he treats, obviously, his children and his wife if he's married. I mean, if you
– Yeah.
And David certainly showed that, eh?
Absolutely. I mean,
the way he treats his family, his granny and all that is beautiful.
Absolutely.
What impressed me most about him was we were talking about a particular political figure. We won't mention names. And he said the thing that he – what off-put him most about this particular figure was the fact that he was a womanizer. You know?
Yeah.
He found that just completely wrong.
Yeah.
And I thought, I like that. This man is – this man hates womanizing, and he's with my daughter. I like that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it could be dangerous for him if he did that. I remember one of the difficult conversations we had was when mom found a new man in her life, but he had 3 sons. And they moved in, which meant you'd spend a lot of time in that house. And I mean, my fear was, you know, if you as a protective dad, most abuse of young girls happens in step families. Well, a lot of it does. And I remember, I don't know if you remember the conversation, me pulling aside and trying to diplomatically say, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember that conversation?
I don't think I do. Hey.
You don't remember?
We have chatted about it since,
I remember that conversation, because all you want to do is protect, you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it's... it's hard to you want to protect without stifling, hey?
Yeah.
Did you ever feel stifled?
No. Oh, you know, like when I ever wanted to have a sleepover or something, and you like insisted that you come and meet the family before I slept over there, and it was like, oh, Dad, like so embarrassing, you know, like, you know. But that's also from a place of love, and I could recognize that. But
Well, I was blown away about how many of your friends ended up sleeping at our house and I'd never met their parents.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have been this pedophile. Eh?
Yeah.
And they're coming. And that was my thing, you know. If you sleep at someone, I need to know what environment you're going into.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And did I ever embarrass you?
Probably, yeah. No, but no.
Eh?
Generally not.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were lucky to have lots of cool relationships with your mates, eh?
Yeah.
We had some fun parties at our house, eh? Do you remember the one party where we had all your friends around? We totally rearranged the lounge and we turned into a disco floor. Eh?
Yeah.
Oh, that was amazing. Yeah. Yeah, the daddy-daughter relationship, it's so incredibly beautiful, but it can be so fragile, hey?
Yeah.
What advice would you give to dads and daughters out there?
I guess to always keep, like, the communication lines open, you know, as much as difficult as that can be, you know, but that's, like, the cornerstone of anything. If you can talk about stuff, then you can, you know, you can get through it. If it's hidden or brushed under the – you know, brushed away, like it's going to build into resentment and it's never going to be resolved. And then you have these issues, you know, because, you know, we're all only human and there's going to be things that piss us off about each other, you know, so they need to be said, they need to be spoken about and resolved in some sort of way.
So you think a lot of young girls feel like they can't talk to their dads about stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, like that whole notion of men are men and they don't talk and they, you know, they don't cry. And for a daughter to see their dad as vulnerable as well is so important, you know, then it's a safer place for them to talk about, you know, talk about things that are uncomfortable and, you know.
Yeah. And how does a dad do that?
Well, just by being vulnerable also, you know, by opening, you know, the dad has to be in charge in that way, take lead, you know, he's the parent in the situation. He needs to be the one to take the lead, you know?
To set the tone.
To be the first one to be vulnerable.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But then also, and so that's the one thing, being vulnerable. But the other thing is also, how does a dad do this? Show his daughter that no matter what she says, it's not going to affect their relationship.
Yeah.
Hey? I mean, how would a dad set that tone?
I don't know. What do you think? How did you do it?
Well, I mean, it's a love like no other. There's no doubt. I mean, the love you have for your daughter, which I'm grateful to still have. I mean, it grows and matures, but it's is like none other. And I think it's a matter of developing the skills as a man to be able to show that love without stifling, out controlling, out guilting. Obligating.
Yeah.
But also, I think this is where it goes wrong. I think us as men haven't been taught to understand and express our emotions well and to be able to be emotionally literate. Huh?
Mm.
And I think if dads can do that and learn to, I mean, and ask the questions, you know, say, hey, my precious, how are you doing? You know,
yeah.
How are you really doing?
Yeah.
And give the platform and the freedom to be able to actually talk about that. Hey?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very important. Because dads have to be a safe space.
Mm, absolutely.
They have to be a safe space. Always, you know. You can say whatever you want, you can do whatever and you're safe.
Mm.
You're safe emotionally, physically, spiritually, in every way. Mm. And I think that's probably one of the primary roles of a dad, eh? To create because someone once said in a book that every man is the architect of his own home. You create the environment, you know.
Mm.
And if you create a good environment, a safe environment, then the child and the daughter particularly, because daughters are vulnerable, you're free, you're safe.
Feel safe to express anything that's going on, yeah.
And be who you are.
Yeah.
And advice to I'm putting on the spot here a lot. No, but advice to, I mean, because you've studied early childhood development and you're a very intuitive, wise lady now, woman. Advice to teenage girls, you know, because there's a lot of angst, isn't there? It's tough being a teenage girl. Your hormones come in and sexual temptations and boys wanting this and that. I mean, so you know, how do they navigate?
Well, that's a tough one, eh?
It is a tough one, yeah.
Because, I mean, it so depends on where they're at and where they're coming from, you know. Like it's easier for someone that has secure relationships in their life to navigate those kinds of things, you know, knowing the difference – and what is good for you and what is not,
right,
you know?
Right.
But yeah, I think just finding people in your life that are safe if you don't have, you know, family security or anything like that.
Safe and good.
Safe and good. Yeah, yeah. Positive influences and yeah.
And that's not easy, is it? I mean, I know a lot of boys struggle with finding good male role models.
Yeah.
And as a girl, I mean, where do you find good female role models, you know, that are strong, gracious, good, free, whole woman?
Yeah, I mean, they're there. They're out there for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
They are there, definitely. Yeah. But you have to be quite intentional about finding them.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seeking out what is good for you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So being quite intentional about it.
Yeah.
There's that beautiful saying that says, you know, as a youngster, you didn't hold the pen that wrote the story of your life, but there comes a point where you do hold the pen.
Yeah. You have to be in control. You have to take responsibility for your own life and where you want that to go, you know, want that to end up.
Absolutely. That's an intentionality. And that's the most empowering truth for me in the world, isn't it? Eh? That ultimately you choose.
Yeah.
You choose. But it's very difficult if you've grown up in a family which is dysfunctional and all you know is dysfunction.
I know.
You might see your dad mistreating your mom, or your mom might be an alcoholic, or whatever dysfunction there might be. And that's your norm, you know?
Yeah.
And to break out of that's so important, isn't it?
It's difficult, but important, yeah. But you at the end of the day, you have to make that choice yourself. Like if you see all that going on in your family, you don't want that for yourself. You don't want to go down that same path, you know?
Yeah.
And it is hard for some people to click in that moment and not and reverse the cycle, you know?
Absolutely, break the cycle. Difficult. So you as an early childhood development teacher, I mean, you deal with a lot, sort of 3 to 5 year olds, and you see the dynamics in their families. Yeah. And what are some of the common challenges you've seen in that age group, and also in their parents? I mean, we've chatted about a few of those.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard, you know, because I'm definitely an advocate for children, and not particularly interested in dealing with parents. But I mean, that's where it all. Where it all starts, you know. So when we do see challenging behavior and things, you don't blame the child, you blame where they're learning behavior from, you know. And I don't know, I think there's been quite a shift in parenting lately where it's a lot of gentle parenting and you know, the kind of backfall of that is a child will not have any boundaries and not having like security with their parents because they are in charge, basically. And a child doesn't flourish in that setting. A child needs rules and boundaries. That's how they learn. We need to set them in place for them, you know. So nice. I think that's where we see a lot of challenging behavior where there just isn't any boundary, no consequence for actions or anything like that. Because a child will push the boundary till the very end because they need to know how far they can go or what is right. And so, that's probably one of the biggest challenges.
And if there are no boundaries, they just keep going.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
They just keep going in bad behavior.
Absolutely. And as a teacher, you're secondary to the parent, you know. The child will still look to their primary caregivers as what they say goes, you know.
Right.
As a teacher, you still have big influence, but you need to be on the same page as the parent, you know. You need
to Which is tricky if the parents have got a totally different philosophy for what works.
Yeah.
Yeah, that has gone horribly wrong. You know, there's no boundaries. I mean, children flourish with proper, good, solid, fair boundaries.
Absolutely.
Kids want that. You know, I know now that.
Yeah.
There's that one author, I think Peterson, who wrote, you know, never let your children behave in such a way that would make them ugly to others, you know. And I think gentle parenting does that, hey?
Yeah, can do.
Anything goes. Yeah. So, I mean, for me, those are the two things, love and truth in a way. So love and discipline, love and boundaries, you know.
Mm.
I mean, the other extreme, and I think it's a backlash, hey, about parents being too hard and too harsh on kids.
Yeah, and that's not good either.
That's not good either. So you need this balance between love and truth, love and boundaries, which we all navigate as parents and we all get it wrong.
Well, I mean, you as a parent, it's the first time you're doing it as well,
you know.
You learn as you go. That's what we speak about a bit in our book as well. It's our first time being in these roles.
Yes.
So we learn together. We
absolutely
navigate it together.
Yeah. And I must say, you and Luke, without knowing it, obviously, taught me an enormous amount. There's a story I often tell when you had that heart operation. And it was quite a life-changing moment for me because you were two or two and a half, but you were quite nervous. And I asked the doctor if I could carry you into the theater. And he let me, and I carried you in, and you fell asleep in my arms. And then I gave you over to the doctor. And then when you woke up, obviously, after the op, I was there in the recovery room. So for you, you fell asleep in my arms and you woke up next to me. You know, so I guess in your mind, I was the one who did whatever was done.
Yeah.
And then when one of my friends, you said to one of my friends, you were explaining, you said, yeah, my heart was broken because you had a hole in the heart. But my daddy fixed it.
Yeah.
But that made me realize how important I was to you, you know, and how you saw me. And I mean, that was life changing because suddenly you realize you're a father, but you're the most important man in someone's, in this precious little person's life, you know, and pitching up and being okay, not just being present as a parent, but being the best man you can be is crucial. And that helped me so much. It was the greatest inspiration to me.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people have kids and they shouldn't, they're not ready. They don't count the cost. They don't, I mean, you've seen that, eh? With at the school, eh?
All over, really, you know, having kids to fix problems or, you know.
And the kids become the collateral damage, eh?
Or just not taking it in their stride once they have kids to feel the weight of that responsibility and that.
Because ultimately, as a parent, it's not about you as a parent. You don't become a parent for you. You know, you're bringing a precious life into the world. And you're fully responsible for that life. You know? We're not like animals. You know, they get up and they start running around and do their thing. You know? I mean, for 18 years, they need you.
Yeah.
And it's a massive responsibility. Yeah. But I think what a lot of parents maybe don't see is the mutual benefit. You know, the way it transforms and changes the parent too.
Yeah.
Because it forces you to be selfless.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
I mean, there's so many beautiful. I remember. Often we'd drive home from a dinner party or something and you'd fall asleep in the back of the car. And then when we arrived at the house, I could see you were pretending to be asleep.
No.
Because you just wanted to be carried up, you know.
Yeah.
And I could see you smiling and then carry you up to bed and put you. I mean, those are beautiful moments.
Eh? Yeah.
Moments of safety. I remember stroking your hair at night. I don't know if you remember that. Mm. You know, you used to love it. I stroked your hair. And you'd fall asleep. And sometimes I thought you'd fall asleep. And then I'd get up and this little arm would come out and grab it and pull me back, you know. I mean, those are such precious, beautiful moments, you know.
Yeah.
They build in dad and daughter this beautiful understanding of the masculine, feminine dance, eh? How it's this beautiful co-creation. Have you seen women choosing wrong partners as a result of bad dad relationships?
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, we all, even I've had some dodgy choices in my life, not because of bad parenting and stuff, but you grow up and you meet people and you see the best in people and you want that best, you know? And if someone gives you an attention in that way and you recognize that, you know, like there's so many blinkers that we have, you know, to people and it's mostly people that see the best in people. I've found women that choose to see the good, you know, instead of the ugly, and which is a beautiful thing, it's just,
can be dangerous to them.
Can be dangerous.
Well, I mean, women are glue that holds society together. Women are relational.
Yeah.
They're fixers. They want to see someone and they see the good, even if it's a bad, they want to bring the good out and make them whole, you know? Yeah. And I mean, you particularly are a healer and a fixer and a restorer. I mean, that's your heart. You're an empath. You
know?
Amazing. Yeah. Well, we're writing this book and I can't wait to launch it at some point. Eh?
Yeah.
A book about our journey, our love affair, about the sacredness of the Father, and but authentic stuff too around.
Yeah, about the heartbreak and the hard times too.
The tough conversations, the reality of it, you know, and the nitty gritty. And it's been wonderful. But thank you for being my beautiful daughter and making me so proud.
Thanks, Popsy.